Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, gentlemen. Tell me who you are. What you do?
I guess I'll start. My name's Avery Mills. I'm a sophomore at Virginia Tech.
So clarify on that, Avery, because you're not a sophomore in dental school.
No. I'm an undergrad right now, and so we're here at the ASDA conference, and that's all because we have a good pre-dental chapter, and we're aspiring young dentists, pre-dentists. So, yeah, we came down here. There's about 25 pre-dents in total. And so our chapter brought 12.
Yeah.
That literally is insane.
Our squad rolls deep.
I'll go next. I'm Ryan Hutton. I'm also a sophomore at Virginia Tech. Also a pre-dental student.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm Eshawn Honda. I'm a junior at Virginia Tech, pre-dental.
So this just blows my mind. So y'all are two sophomores and a junior at Virginia Tech. Go Hokies. And y'all are, you're pre-dental. So, and you're at a dental conference. Well, that's awesome. So tell me more about this. What are y'all majoring in? How do you know you want to do dentistry? Like, tell me more.
Well, I used to be pre-med, and then I shadowed a couple of doctors and thought it was just like completely depressing vibe. And I've always wanted to do something like help people, be my own boss. And then I shadowed a dentist and completely fell in love with it. So no doubt about it. Just love it.
Nice. What are you majoring in?
Psychology. So it's, cool. It's different. Everyone else is like a bio major.
That's
so.
Actually quite good for your application.
Yeah.
And it'll probably come and help you when you're, you know, trying to like figure out patients.
Yeah, like personal statement too. Like that's what I'm probably going to write about, like how it kind of relates.
He's already got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay. What about you?
I am a biology major.
Nice.
So typical. I kind of figured out dentistry in a similar way. I used to think I wanted to do medicine in high school. And then I got a job at a dentist office, kind of doing like the assistant to the assistant sort of role, like setting up rooms, breaking them down.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's fantastic.
So just kind of doing whatever I was told, basically.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Then kind of just fell in love with it. I saw that it was a lot of what I liked about medicine, and a lot of the hesitations I had were removed. So that's kind of how I came to it.
What were some of those hesitations?
Just like how it impacts your personal life, your family life.
Huge.
being on call, time to spend with your family, the amount of patients you have to see a day is obviously different. So that just kind of swayed my decision.
For sure. All right.
So I'm a biology and economics major, and I came into it pretty early. I knew, like, in middle school that I wanted to be a dentist. It wasn't because my family was a dentist or anything. I don't know. I started shadowing my freshman, sophomore year. And one thing I noticed was that I thought every dentist I ever met was very, very cool, very personable. In medicine, a lot of times, because my dad owns a business. He's a small business owner. And so I've always thought I wanted to own my own business. And I felt like dentistry gave me a better opportunity to do that. In medicine, a lot of physicians are working for the hospitals now. So over 50%, as they mentioned earlier in the conference today, are working for like the hospital. And I thought that I could come into this and hopefully, you know, maybe have a couple partners, but, you know, eventually maybe run my own business. And so that draws me towards it. That's why I'm double majoring in economics, because they teach you how to be a dentist. They don't teach you how to run a practice. I love the idea. I've done a lot of the Missions of Mercy projects, and I love the idea of just like helping people, hands-on stuff.
Those are all legit. I mean, that's good reasons. I mean, how did so tell me more about the pre-dental society at Virginia Tech, because that's pretty impressive that they've brought, how many students did they bring?
I think we're like the most like nationally recognized as a chapter.
We have one of the most like nationally acclaimed. I think we're 110 deep or something.
Yeah, we have a lot of pre-dentals.
Yeah. It's like multiplying every year too.
Yeah, so they have a lot of really good opportunities. Like a lot of kids find out about like the Missions of Mercy or their RAM projects in Virginia, but it's kind of the same. And Missions of Mercy is kind of a more familiar name, so I tend to use that. But they give us those opportunities. They have speakers coming every week usually. We do like carving stuff.
Yeah, we had like veterinary dentists, like dentists from around come, and we had VCU Dean come, Louisville Dean come.
Wow.
Yeah. Definitely good opportunities.
Awesome. That's great. I mean, I'll tell you this, y'all are far and be above your peers and where you're gonna be. I mean, that's fantastic you're getting this experience. I will tell you though, to enjoy it, take it all in. I mean, the work will come soon enough, you know. So don't let the don't bust it so hard. I think it's great that y'all are doing, you know, you're double majoring, but y'all are doing some majors that are different. Now, I did ecology, so I'm right there with you. Not that it's a bad way to do it. Just the reality is I don't use that at all in any day to day. So I think it's cool that y'all are doing things other than a biology major, because I think you'll actually use them once you get out, which is nice. So what questions y'all have for me?
All right. So, I guess, like, where do you practice? Are you an associate with him?
No. So I refuse to be an associate with him.
Is he like your best friend from like dental school? Did you guys meet in dental school?
No. So let me go back a little. So I'm in Nashville. I bought a practice this year. Holsinger was in pediatric. So he's older than me. I guess like 6 years older than me. He went out and practiced general dentistry for 3 years and then went back to pediatric residency at Tennessee. So I was in dental school when he was in residency. So he like checked off my work and pedo and stuff. So we got to know each other there pretty well. And then we both moved to Nashville. And so we kind of continued on more. So that's how we kind of hit it off.
So like, how do you like balance your time between like this business and then practicing?
I do a terrible job.
Really?
terrible job. My wife is so fed up with it and over it. You know, that's a good question. It's hard. I'm very fortunate because the practice, for the most part, steers itself. I've got such a great team that it's a pretty solid ship that moves in the direction it needs to move without me having to be behind the wheel.
That's awesome.
So gives me opportunity to do more. But it's hard just because I still have huge visions for what I want the practice to be and what I want all this to be. And so that's a hard thing. I don't turn off very often. I'll wake up at like, 4:30 in the morning and text my dad something about like, and he's just like, freaking, what the heck are you doing? Thinking about that. Like, so it is what it is, but, I'm trying to find a better balance just because my wife's like a little over it, and it's hard just because you want to be passionate about something, but,
What's your ultimate like vision for this? Like, what do you want to get out of this?
Yeah, it's a great question. So a little bit of it, I don't know. It started kind of so organically that I was kind of like, it just happened. What my ultimate kind of goal, I guess, is I would love to practice 50% of the time and teach 50% of the time. So
just kind of travel.
Ultimately I would, early on traveling, it'd be cool to have my own like center at some point that where people come in to learn things or do things, locally, just because then you don't have to, you're not gone every weekend. Cause that's hard. That's part of the reason I work so hard on my practice is because if I can do less with more there, then that gives me more time to do, if I can only work 2 days a week there, but produce the same as I could do in four, then that gives me 2 extra days to do other things. So my ultimate goal is that this helps build my brand individually, which allows me to do more speaking stuff, teaching stuff, and it's a great way to do that.
I feel like you have like a pretty like unique brand here, and I don't really know much about it, but it seems kind of like an untapped market, a select market,
sure,
but like untapped. I don't know if anybody else is doing anything.
No,
like this.
I think you're right. That is part of it. Is there's not, there really isn't. And I go back, I'm not here without like such the phenomenal support that I have, because if I don't have an ideal situation to fall into and get out to a good start, then you can't do this at my age, So, cause a lot of people are just trying to figure things out. And so I was able to learn, not make a lot of mistakes because I had good people helping me do it that allowed me to get there earlier. And so then all of a sudden there's like, well, I can relate better because there's people in the market that want to talk to. I mean, everyone knows that the future of dentistry is our generation, right? They get that. The problem is it's hard to find someone that relates to us, And so I relate way better to you do than to y'all than the 45-year-olds in suits, and that's just the way it is.
I can see that because, like, I had the dentist office I shadow at, there's like an 80-year-old dentist and then like a 29-year-old, and they both are like teaching each other different things that they learn.
Which, so, and that's huge. Yeah. So y'all didn't get to hear my lecture today, but that's huge. And that's really where you can have ultimate success.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
There's a quote I quote all the time that I'll tell you guys, and it's kind of what the, one of the keys to a successful generational relationship. And that's that most old, the biggest problem between those relationships is that older dentists have a problem with their ego, meaning it took me all this time to get here. I walked up snow in the uphill both
ways.
They
respect me.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I earned it.
Uh-huh.
And then we have an entitlement issue. You know, we think that we're entitled. We want it now. We want it. And look, I do want it now. Like I don't want to wait for it. The beauty is that I don't have to. I can learn it because of technology and that stuff. We can bridge gaps way faster than they could have. Just like the next generation will kick our ass just because as we get better and smarter, that's what should happen.
So that's evolution.
It's exactly. Yeah. Right. So what we have to figure out, what we do that's a struggle is, but at the same time is be humble and know that there's nothing, experience is still very valuable. Even though we can YouTube everything, there's still nothing like learning from someone who's done it and tried and true for 30 years. So if we can get over the entitlement thing, they can get over the ego thing. Gosh, both things can teach people so much.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, that's a big one.
That's a good thought. Right. Yeah.
What else? I got anything?
I guess. Where do you see dentistry going as far as like social media marketing? Because I'm like an economics major, so I love to see how, you know, the two will intertwine. But like, where do you see it going as far as like social media being a use of promotion and all that stuff?
You know, that's a great question. I think it's going to be huge. I mean, it is. I mean, the way people access information is already changing. So, I mean, how would you find an optometrist to go to? What would you do?
Google.
So, Yelp.
So right there, there's two huge answers, right? You're going to Google it and you're going to Yelp it. So the way I think is like, okay, there's two places I'm starting. You know, I need to make sure that I have a Google presence and I have a Yelp presence. The other is that more and more people, who makes the most appointments for dental?
I mean, like, who, like
kids, younger people,
so, but
older people, older
who
young.
Who schedules the majority of dental appointments?
Parents.
Give even more specific.
People of an older generation.
Affluent. I don't know.
The women.
30 to women.
Moms.
Yeah, okay. The moms. Okay.
Okay. Uh-huh. So women by far are the, like, it's just insane statistically. Schedule more dental appointments than anybody else in the family.
Because they schedule for their kids and for their husband and for themselves.
Exactly. So what happens then is, okay, well, where do a lot of women spend a lot of time? Facebook. Social media, whatever. So you got to think like your clientele thinks. So I think that more and more, you know, I'm still somewhat subject on the social media thing. It's like, I don't go to Instagram to find out where I'm going to the doctor, but people are doing it. You know, I've had people fly in to have work done because they saw pictures that I posted on like our millennial dentist account, you know, and they're like, well, I want you to do the work. So, and that's crazy, but that's happening. I know a buddy of mine out in New Mexico who literally, like, that's how his practice is built. He doesn't even have a practice. People just fly in to have stuff, a certain one procedure he does well because people find it. And, you know, because that's, I think people do know if people want something specific, they're looking for it, you know. So it's changing. I mean, you know, you're no longer doing the marketing that that our parents' generation did. So
have you ever heard of like Dr. Pimple Popper or like Dr. Miami? Do you know what that is?
I don't know what that is.
All right. So Dr. Miami is like a plastic surgeon and he does like all of his like procedures on Snapchat. And so, and then Dr. Pimple Popper is like a dermatologist, obviously, and she like pops pimples.
Facebook.
Yeah, like they like.
Oh, nice.
They Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, all their stuff, and they're making a lot of money doing that, and it's also like really promoting their business.
Their
so I could
too.
Like, I could see someone like coming into that, like, because there's no big name. There's a big name for a dermatologist and a plastic surgeon, but no one's really doing that in dentistry, showing like,
I mean,
cool operations.
There are people out there. I mean, when you're right though, when you're 100% right. I mean, these are that's out there for the taking. I mean, I know dentists who have like 60,000 followers on Instagram. And it's like, well, that's, I don't know how they're monetizing that, but I'm sure they're monetizing it in some way. You know,
yeah,
it's like
probably have too many patients at that point.
I mean, so all that's it, that's yeah, that's an area I would need to do more. I actually interviewed a guy on the way up here to kind of basically take away, because you just don't want to have so many hours in a day. You know, you got to kind of build. That was another thing I talked about today, was you got to build your team. You know, and build people and bring people in that can help you do that, just because it's hard to do. Well, gentlemen, thank y'all for jumping on the podcast.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you for having us. Pleasure.
And y'all are definitely the first non-dental people that want to be dental people on. So,
yeah. Thanks a lot.
All right, gentlemen. Thank y'all so much. Y'all have a great great rest of the meeting. All right?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, guys. So, introduce yourselves.
I'm Sean O'Neill. I'm a dentist practicing in Northwest Iowa currently. I am the past District 8 trustee of ASDA.
Oh, wow.
I know. Awesome. And then we have Alex with us here as well, so I'll let her introduce herself.
I'm Alex Howell. I am a D3 at the Dental College of Georgia.
That's pretty impressive. So you're a D3 and you're like running the show here.
Yeah.
How many people are here?
290.
I don't think I've ever seen a ASDA district meeting have 290 people.
Yeah, I don't know that I have either. It's been kind of crazy.
So congratulations to you. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
I mean, is this what you expected? Or
not
what?
At all. I planned for 185.
Wow.
Because that's what it's been for
How
the past couple
did
years.
Bring?
We have 63 from Georgia.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So what kind of, what? Why the difference? What's happening?
I think the location is a lot better. Our district is kind of spread out. So we have like Memphis and then we have Charleston. So yeah. Last year it was in Charleston and Memphis ended up having to drive like
you
12
either have
hours.
To, yeah, that so, or fly. Which,
yeah. So it's kind of hard for us to do the meeting at a dental school because someone is driving 12 hours. So I kind of picked like the very center location of all the schools.
Well, that apparently might need to be a recurring.
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah, it's been great.
Sweet. So what all goes into this?
Oh,
as
man.
As far as lots of planning, lots of time?
Lots of months of planning.
Do you coordinate with the other schools or how does that work?
Yeah, so I, as District 5, 4 trustee, I'm in charge of all the ASDA chapters of Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia. So I'm in close communication with their chapter presidents and their vice presidents and president-elects. And we just kind of coordinate with them as far as what dates are good and when and what they're thinking about, what they want out of the district meeting, and then go from there.
Did you plan a meeting?
I did. It was last January, actually, last weekend of last January.
Is that crazy that you a year ago you were doing that, and now you're like just kicking ass and taking aims in the real world?
Yeah, it's been an amazing year, and I accredit a lot of my accomplishments to everything that I learned through ASDA planning meetings.
That's
like this.
Cool.
When you have to plan a meeting for hundreds of people that are coming from, I mean, in my case, 4 different states, all to one meeting location, and they're all expecting the time of their life, not only, you know, a mass amount of knowledge and inspiration, but also, I mean, dentists like to have fun, dental students like
oh,
to have fun.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
So there's a lot of expectations for that weekend, and I know what Alex is going through here. I can't imagine having 300 people. I think I had 120 at mine.
That's what I'm saying.
120, I felt like was like, oh my God, because like the biggest District 8 meeting before that, I think was only like 60.
Wow.
So I doubled that and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then I come to meetings like this and there's 300 people here. And it's like,
yeah.
I look around and I'm like, how is this happening? So it's just amazing to see.
Who all is a part of District 8?
District 8 is Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Kansas City,
okay, so
Missouri,
kind of
Kirksville,
okay.
So also known as AT Still, Creighton, and Nebraska. At Lincoln.
Yeah, nice.
So
oh my gosh.
There's 6 schools there. Technically, we also have like the Dakotas, but there's no schools there. And Kansas, but again, no schools there because Missouri, Kansas City is obviously Missouri, not Kansas City, Kansas. So yeah, it was a year ago and I remember it vividly. I'm sure Alex is lacking a little sleep right now from.
So Alex,
do you get to
learn at all?
Oh yeah.
Do you get to like,
absolutely.
You're just trying to survive right now.
I mean, I didn't really sleep at all last night, so I am a little buzzy, but absolutely, I'm definitely learning.
Funny. What do you hope to accomplish when you come to these things? I mean, what is ultimately your goal as, you know, putting this together and the trustee and whatnot to accomplish?
Yeah. So at least for me personally, my ultimate career goal is academia.
Nice.
I see myself being a professor in some dental school. And so for me, I am kind of on always thinking of like the student side of things. And obviously I am a student, but I love the idea of bringing people from 5 different states and coming together and learning about their future career and learning about how we can advocate for our profession now as students and understanding that they have a role, even if they're just general ASDA members in their chapter, that they still can have an active role and be able to develop their leadership skills into something that can really affect them positively in their careers in the future.
That was good. I feel like
there's a reason she got where she is.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, dadgum, that was a good answer. I would have like had to like come up with that for a while. All right, so do you plan to practice at all? Are you going to go straight into academia?
I am really on the fence. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do. I've played with the ideas of like pathology or oral medicine and then going into academia or, you know, maybe private practice. I don't see myself in private practice long term, but I'm not really sure yet.
That's kind awesome. Do you think you'll stay in Georgia? Think you move around?
I like the idea of going somewhere else. I've been in Georgia all my life, so
okay.
I'm open to the idea of going to different places.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Appreciate it.
I want to talk more about you. And so tell me your story.
Well,
because how do you go from District 8 trustee to just throwing in implants, sedating people, doing all these specialty stuff, all the third molars, you're not referring any third molars out, and you're less than a year out of dental school.
Yeah, I think the big thing, and as we talked earlier, what I emphasize is just pushing yourself in dental school. I mean, there's so many procedures out there, and there's so much knowledge in that school that you can learn, and so many people don't want to go out of their comfort zone. They want to stick to the easiest crown preps they can find. One of the classics is endo, and they're always looking for the single canal teeth. They don't want to do molars. And going into private practice, I knew, especially if I stayed in the Midwest, I wasn't going to have that option. I mean, our nearest endodontist is like an hour away, and he's only in that office, I think, 2 days a week. His normal office is 2 hours away. So I can't just refer a patient daily out to an endodontist because they don't want to drive. And they come back to the office and say, well, can't you just do it? So, and I had that idea, no matter where I stayed, I was staying in the Midwest most likely. And that's the case in a lot of those areas. It's a little different in your bigger cities,
oh, yeah.
East Coast.
Yeah, you're required to do more necessarily than your typical GP would.
Yeah, and so I always just wanted to push myself. When it came to endo, I tried to take as many molars as I could. If I can do a molar, I should hopefully be able to do, a number 8 or number 9. Not always the case, but hope.
Yeah.
So, and same thing, I mean, when it comes down, you mentioned the wisdom teeth and oral surgery aspect of it. And, I decided when I was at the school to do as much oral surgery as I can. Worked over like Christmas break and spring break and other breaks in the oral surgery department. They always want to hire third and fourth year students to help out because it is the trauma center and the tertiary care center, and patients come from all over the state to the university for care. We have an expanded Medicaid in Iowa, and so the university is the major provider, especially for specialists. So they're just constantly coming in, and I got an invaluable experience working one-on-one with oral surgeons. And when you're there over the summer, it's one-on-one. During the school year, they've got 10, 15, 20 students at a time. And when you start working with them one-on-one, they start challenging you as much as I was challenging myself. They're like, oh, you can take out that tooth. Why not? And I'm thinking, are you crazy?
Because what you learn is the back end side of that is they don't really want to have to get involved anyways. They're kind of like, oh, sure, you can, like that. So once they see you could do it, they're willing to give you a lot more leash.
Yeah, exactly. And I just kept challenging myself, kept getting more and more comfortable, and magically by the end of my fourth year, I was taking out teeth I would have never even thought in a million years I would have. And because of that experience and because of the confidence they instilled in me by them wanting me to do those things, going into private practice, I had all the confidence in the world, good or bad, but
right.
You make mistakes, you learn a lot, and as you know, the first 6 months, I've done more procedures than I did in the first 4 years
all
of dental school.
Yeah.
With the impacted wisdom teeth, I started taking them out, and my first couple patients were people I knew, whether it was staff, whether it was friends, and that, and it's just continued to roll. And it started out one a week, and now it's two a week. And I mean, Friday before I came here, I took out I think 15 or 16 wisdom teeth.
It's funny how wisdom teeth come in waves too, because it's all about like around holidays, summer, like when kids are home from college, like. I'll do no wisdom teeth, and then I'll do the same thing. You'll do a ton of them because it's the time of year.
Exactly, and I think what's made help build it is it's gotten out that I'll take them out. Oral surgeons in town are so busy that it's months before they can get a patient in. If they're lucky and the dentist calls over, it might be 2 or 3 weeks at the absolute soonest, unless it's a true emergency. And I can tell people, I'll get you in a week or a week and a half. If it's an emergency where they're in pain, or more of an urgency thing, not really emergency, I can get them in the next day if I really want to. I'll extend hours over a lunch break or whatever. And I tend to do that for, you know, a lot of the college kids, and it just continued to build and build, and now it's a significant portion of my practice.
So. That's crazy. Well, what I love about that and what I hope people take home and they hear from you is not just like, oh, it's just, and you freaking, you went after it. Like, you saw what, you built that, whether you realize it or not, you know, like, you worked through summers, you stayed, you engaged the residents. I mean, you did things that was very strategic. Alex, you gotta get out of here.
We both do.
Oh, okay. Hurry up.
Sorry.
So, and what really the, my point is that you engaged into it, right? So many people kind of sit back and wait for it to come to them, and I think that kills you. And so if you want to do things, you want to do impacted thirds, like that's a one that's a great one to do, then go learn from the like meet the residents, follow the residents, be their shadow, so that then when the opportunity comes where they're the ones that are overseeing you, they're like, hey, you've seen me do this 20 times, you do it. And if you get stuck, I'll help you out.
Exactly. And the other thing, and again, we talked about this earlier today, but just continuing ed. I mean, I try to do as much of it as possible. I was doing continuing ed during my fourth year of school, like you said you were. I was going to implant courses. A lot of them were focused more on restoring implants. But the first two things I did after I graduated is I enrolled in an implant course and I enrolled in an ortho course. We get no ortho really coming out of Iowa. It's very limited. I mean, they expose you to it basically to help you try to diagnose the need to refer. But again, so many patients are wanting to have ortho done in your office or very simple things that there's no reason a general dentist can't do. Still, we'll refer out a lot of ortho cases, but there's a lot of them that, you know, we should be able to do. And so, you know, I started doing that, the implant courses. And now it's like every weekend I'm either doing something like that. I'm watching, you know, videos online, you know, podcasts, whatever it can be. Something just like this podcast here.
Just to extract what I'm doing on, yeah,
you know, Saturday afternoon when I'm sitting at home, or Sunday when I'm watching football, I'm watching a podcast on my computer with football in the background, just trying to extract as much information. And I think it's so important for students, just because dental school ended, you know, after 4 years, they need to continue to learn. And what I told myself is, you know, I don't have the money now, but is it better to take the implant course now or in 10 years? And how much production and how much, you know, value am I going to lose if I wait 10 years to do this?
No, you're dead on.
And, you know, the implant course, it was expensive, but what was amazing to me is how quickly my production was increasing, how many procedures, not even implant related, bone grafting and other things,
yeah,
that I was diagnosing and picking up that I'd never did before. You know, tissue grafting, all of those things that were procedures I didn't learn anything about in school. And I was learning about them.
They start piggybacking on each other,
and,
yeah.
And now it just keeps rolling, and it keeps rolling, and the ball keeps getting bigger and bigger. And, you know, your patient base grows, and as patients are happy with the work you're doing, and they're happy they didn't have to drive 2 hours to go somewhere, in my case, you know, they continue to refer people to you. And the other big thing is, you know, they picked you as their dentist for a reason. They trust you. So if you're willing to do the procedure, they want you to do it.
Gosh, you aren't kidding.
And they would so much rather go to the dentist that they go to every 6 months than to a specialist down the road.
Treatment acceptance is like tenfold because of that.
Yeah. So, you know, it continues to unfold. And all of these courses build confidence. It builds confidence in your diagnostic ability. You know, my first month was rough. I had a lot of, you know, treatment plans denied. And I was like, but you need this. Like, this is right. Like,
yeah.
You know, you didn't know how to sell it. And now I don't even have to sell it. I diagnose it, I explain the processes to them, and they enroll in it. You know, they buy in and they want it. And, you know, now they're coming in saying, what else can I do? What else can I do? I want to continue to improve and all of that. And all of that confidence is just from continuing to learn and continuing to push the envelope in areas. So
that's fantastic. All right, y'all get out of here because I know y'all got to go.
Thank you.
This is
thank
fun.
You.
All right. Yeah, y'all have a great time.
Thank
we'll,
you.
We'll talk to y'all later.
Yeah. Right.
Thanks.
See you tomorrow.
All right. Hey, ladies.
Hi.
Welcome to the Millennial Dentist Podcast.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
So what year are y'all? Or tell me your names and where you're from and what school you're at and what your year is.
I'm Taylor Enix. I'm from the University of Tennessee Dental School and I'm a D3.
Okay.
I'm Lauren Leiden. I'm also from University of Tennessee and I'm a D1.
I'm Taylor Rogers. I'm also a D1 at UT.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Two D1s. Wow. I have not had a D1 on the podcast, so y'all are definitely
the first.
Oh my gosh.
Y'all are the first there. So nice. Okay, so this is definitely y'all's first meeting.
Yes, for sure.
Taylor, you've been to some other dental meetings before?
This is my second district meeting, and I've also been to NLC in annual session.
So you've been a couple of things. So what do y'all think so far?
I like it. I feel like I've learned a lot of stuff.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Very educational.
I find that what I always thought was interesting was I feel like I learned more in an hour at something like this than I would at like 3 months in dental school. And I say like that, like maybe stuff that like directly impacts you or
stuff that matters. Yeah.
Actually, it's exciting. This is the first time. So any other meeting like this, we've brought at the most 5 to 8 people. Yeah. And this year is the first year we opened it up to outside of as the executive committees. And we got like, we just sent an interest survey. We had like 60 people respond. And then when we actually had people sign up, we had 40 people respond. And the majority of people were D1s, which was really crazy. Cool to get them here this early, experiencing all this stuff now.
When y'all have like 40 people here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome. I mean, I think that's really good. And that's great for y'all because y'all are going to be so far ahead of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is a lot of this is probably overwhelming.
In a way, yeah.
To a degree. But, yeah. But the good part is like you're gonna hear it multiple times because like that's really the problem is things take a while to like really impact you. You know, like you need to hear something a couple times before it really becomes ingrained in your head. So I think that's the beauty of doing this early. So what do y'all got? Questions? Come on.
I asked him quite a few questions earlier, so y'all take this.
So tell me this: what have you found is the hardest part about being in D1? Is it what you expected?
It's actually not what I was expecting. I was expecting the classwork to be harder. And it to be less time consuming, but it's opposite. Like the classes themselves aren't super hard, but there's just so much we have to do in one day that you like end your day at 5:00, but then you might have to stay in the lab for like 3 hours after that and then be back in the next 12 hours for the next day.
Right.
A lot of staying till lab till it ends at 11.
Yeah. Yeah.
With man, Tucker.
UT did an amazing job. Like,
cheers.
Easing us into things first semester, because first semester I thought like the first month was just a big party and I was like, is this really dental school?
I know, it is crazy. Yeah. That first month I was like, oh my
lots
gosh,
of parties.
It's insane. Misleading.
And then it gets a little tougher. Finals week is like, okay, this is what I expected. And then coming back spring semester is like we hit the ground running automatically and you're like, oh no, I got to get on top of my game now. Like this is real. We have boards in a year and that. Now it's a little overwhelming.
It's overwhelming in a good way. I mean, I think you're going to get trained well and you're going to survive. I mean, I always told people, I was like, really the ultimate thing is you just have to survive in advance. You know, really, unless you want to be like, you want to do ortho, like right out of graduation, like you want to go into, other than that, like, I mean, just enjoy it. I mean, because you really have, I mean, you need to pass, you need to do well, but like, you might as well enjoy these 4 years because, you know, once you hit the ground running working, like it's,
you don't get 3 weeks off for Christmas anymore.
No. So it is nice to be able to like see that and take advantage of that as far as that goes. So,
yeah. Right. But I really like how UT, like the first month, they have a lot of parties so that you can meet all your classmates. I feel like we all got really close.
Sure.
Really quickly. And that helped a lot because then later on it got harder. We don't have as much time to hang out.
Yeah. We had a great, our class was great. I mean, like some of the classes got so competitive and whatever. I was like, that's just miserable. I mean,
yeah, ours really isn't like that.
Stick together because it's way easier when it gets going to like have to deal with that than.
Yeah. And then when you go to clinic and you really have to help each other out, it's nice to already have those relationships.
Yeah. No, 100%. Gosh. What's it been like meeting their schools? Have you all hung out with them much?
We've talked to Meharry people, and we partnered with some Virginia ladies earlier. We actually won the little game that we had.
Yeah. Did y'all really?
We won.
I don't know
what y'all hear me yelling about.
We haven't got
Benzocaine.
It yet. Yeah.
I was the one that called that out. I said, we do not prescribe Benzocaine. That does not count.
That's true, though. It's not prescription.
But it's good to take this opportunity to meet all these other schools because you'll learn to appreciate your school, and then you'll learn the things that maybe you're going to have to do on your own because other schools are getting it and you're not. And so, like, they're at UT, I've learned that we start lab work really early compared to a lot of other schools, which is really cool because our hand skills are better. But then, you know, a guy from Meharry today was saying that because they don't have a lot of residencies.
Yeah, they don't get stuff cherry picked out of you.
Yeah, they're getting to do more procedures. So that means you have to push to do more procedures to match up with them. So it's.
No, that's a great point. Molar endo is going to be harder to get to do, you know, and that's it's a huge skill set that can, you know, really do a lot for you. When you graduate.
Yeah. I have a question.
Let's hear it.
Were you in a dental fraternity?
I was. It was a zip.
Woo!
Zip.
Lame.
Yes.
Nope. I'm a CIO.
Really, you know, we worried that CIO was even going to make it.
Uh-oh.
Hey, my class has turned CIO around.
That's good.
It was actually like,
really,
it
really, week was really
it was
fun.
Great.
Because we had, I mean, it got to the point where, like, I guess the year after ours, when we were like running it, because I was like the recruitment chair or whatever that year.
I can see that.
We almost, like, it was almost bad. Like, we almost just like destroyed them. Because we had, because the problem is then we have so much more money.
Yeah.
Right? Because we have more people, we have more money. And so then it was like, they didn't, couldn't even compete. And so it almost, if it weren't for a few people that really held on and banded together, SIO would have been no more. It would have been,
I can believe
need,
that.
You need both of them for it to be fun.
Yeah.
It really what it is you need 2 weeks of fun. So
yeah, that's,
exactly.
It's different. Well, it's good
class,
to have
we
both
had a
of
good,
them.
Like, yeah.
A good mixture
fairly
of
equal
people.
Distribution. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot
yeah.
Of
the class before mine had a couple people that went SIO, and they're the ones who kind of built it up. And then when we came in, I guess those few people recruited enough of us and got us on board. And now, like, it's Zip still recruited more people, but it's definitely a little more competitive now. So it's a little more fun, too.
Well, good. That's good.
There's some good, like, inter-fraternity challenges going on. Like, well, we did this, well, we're going
to
do this.
I have a question, too.
All right.
What kind of drove you or who got you on board wanting to do so much CE, like, right when you were finishing?
You know, that's a good question because, honestly, in dental school, I was not, like, the most – well, I take that back. In the first 2 years, I was like, I want to be in the middle of the pack. Do whatever. I was like, I don't care about this. In clinic, I got pretty driven just because I knew that what I did at that point then had a direct impact on my future. So like I knew I wanted to be good. You know, I didn't want to be a crappy dentist. So like, and then it was really part of it was survival. When I graduated, I knew I was going in with my dad. I knew that I had to produce and I knew that, you know, so many people think that in order to add an associate, they have to double the patient base. Well, you don't if you just do more procedures. So like our practice didn't just grow. Like it wasn't like we were getting 100 new patients a month or something crazy like that. But all of a sudden we just didn't refer as much out. So for me, part of the reason I did a lot of CE early on, especially the CE that I did, was because I needed to be able to have something that I could go back and do. You know, because what happens is, and then it is whether it's with a parent or with a new older dentist or wherever you are, is that when you diagnose stuff and they get to the front and they say, do you care who you see? Well, early on, they're like, yeah, I'd like the older one, please.
Yeah.
You know, now they don't care as much. I mean, you still have some that are picky one way or the other. But I would treatment things and they would schedule with him. Like, that sucks. That doesn't help me. You know, like I'm just putting money in his pocket. So by doing things he didn't know how to do, I eliminated that problem. You know, so I was like, well, you can't, you know, they don't have an option. So that was a big part was, part of what motivated me was just financial need to be able to produce, to need to be able to do things. And then part of it is, I guess, just wanting to be better. I mean, the good thing about CE is CE is not all equal. Let me put it that way. There's good CE and then there's crappy CE. Okay. So once you go to good CE though, like you kind of get like the bug for it because you're just like, well, that's awesome. I learned a lot. I came back. I implemented. It's having a direct correlation. It really impacts you differently. Versus sometimes you go to like maybe something that's local, that's free. It may not be. And so then if that's your vision of CE, well, then maybe you don't, you know. So you got to be careful. So sometimes you got to pick. I mean, you got to take good CE, you know, just because not all CE is kind of created equal.
You mentioned the Alabama implant thing earlier. Mm-hmm. I've heard Dr. Bernstein mention that before. Did you like just research different places to go?
So
or
I guess where I had heard about that was there's also a residency there. So like an AGD. And I'd heard good things about that. And I knew I wanted to place implants. I knew that I wanted to place implants at a course. Like I didn't want to go to a course that just was didactic, that I didn't actually get to place an implant on a human. But I also didn't want to break the bank. So by the time you research a bunch of courses, you kind of realize that was a good one. The other ones I recommend all the time are implant seminars, which is Arun Garg, Dr. Garg. It's a lot of that's in the Dominican, where they like really go down and
oh, I there. Love the Dominican. That could be fun.
So that's fun. Implant Pathway is another one that is fabulous. Dr. Justin Moody does that one, and that one's kind of on the, I guess, more the west side of the country. What's nice about that company is in that course is you get a lot of foundation and restoring stuff. So, like, I didn't get any foundation in restoring implants or restoring, you know, from that side. So, I had to kind of learn that on my own. So, if that's a negative to that course, it was the lack of restoration knowledge that you got. But
did you take another course on restoration knowledge or had
no,
you sort of figured that out?
I just kind
of
winged it. Gotcha. You know, you kind of learn from your mistakes. And
yeah.
So, I'm also a big CEREC guy. So, CEREC has its own community called CEREC Doctors. So, they're beyond helpful. So I could post a case on there and they can tell me exactly what to do, what not to do, help me design it, that sort of thing. So I didn't just wing it. I utilized people to help me. I didn't go take a course on it.
So we don't get a lot of SAOC opportunities in clinic. Did you get opportunities in clinic or did you go take a course right away?
No, my person hated it, honestly. I kind of got to the point where it was more my fourth year probably where I said, look, I'm going into a practice that has CEREC. I want to use CEREC. You know, I don't really care. Like, I'm going to do it. You know, at some point, once you, and for me, like, I was a gunner in clinic, which is kind of surprising, but so I got my requirements done a lot more. So then at that point, they can't really complain as much when you're like ahead, when you're kind of their poster boy for the group anyways, just as far as like getting stuff done and being like going on it, they couldn't really say much. So I kind of, which you have to go after yourself. I mean, they're not, because you know that already. I mean, they're not going to just like be like, oh, you should go, unless your group leader's totally into it, they're not going to push you to do it. So you got to kind of do it yourself. Well, ladies, thank y'all for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
This was fun.
I feel like I'm on Clay Travis.
Anyway, it's basically the same thing, except for dentistry. It's like Barstool Sports.
Yes.
All right. Well, y'all have a wonderful rest of your meeting. And we'll talk later.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Welcome back again to the Millennial Dentist Live at, we're in Asheville as a District 4 conference. So, Amber, Omar, introduce yourselves, first off.
Okay. My name is Amber Spurlock. I'm a D3 at Meharry Medical College School of Dentistry. I am the president at the Meharry chapter, okay, nice. And I am also the State Dental Association for District 4.
Hey, guys. This is Omar Glover. I'm a second-year dental student at East Carolina University. I'm heavily involved on my campus and on the cabinet for District 4 here.
So, both of y'all, I'm so impressed. Holzer and I have been cracking up all weekend. I think the most people we ever had at a meeting was like 50 or 60.
Wow.
I mean, we were only allowed to bring like 10 people. Like, or I guess our cabinet was all that was really to come. And how many people have y'all brought from your schools?
Harry had 31 people attend.
31
this
people. That's fantastic. What in what years?
We have from D4 to D1.
That's incredible.
Every class.
So, how did y'all do that? Did y'all just say, hey, anybody, let's go? Who wants to come? Or?
So, we started off by asking our officers, okay, see who wanted to come. And then we literally just opened it up to school, yeah, printed out the flyers, posted them in the elevators, just see who was interested. And we got an overwhelming response this year. Sure. People just want to know about organized dentistry.
And how about y'all?
Very similar. One of the main things we do, we send out an email to all our classes, all 4 years. And everyone has the opportunity to respond to that email and then be selected to be funded to come here. So they're not here on their own money. Like, the school is supporting them financially to enrich their dental experience.
I mean, there's like correct me if I'm wrong, but this is basically like the largest district meeting ever. I mean, pretty much. I mean, like 300 people here. Okay, so tell me what I kind of want to talk about, because obviously we have lots of students listening that aren't here. What have y'all gained from this weekend? And I mean, is this y'all's first meetings?
This is my first district meet.
Okay.
But of course, I've been to the National Leadership Conference and annual session.
Okay. And what about you, Omar?
This is my second.
Okay, your second. So take a little time and tell me kind of what y'all gotten out of them and what you experienced and why make the effort to come here. And because in dental school, you got a lot going on. And so I think that's a big hurdle for people is they're like, oh, I got too much going on to go learn more, do more. Why have y'all taken so much time and effort to make it happen?
My push, which has been with students and administration, is at school, we get the curriculum. We learn how to do dentistry. We get all the information around dentistry, except what organized dentistry is. We don't get that exposure to insurance. We don't get to talk to graduates about the experience they have in residency. So it's beneficial to come to, you know, conferences where you could get that information. You could see other people who have the same questions as you, and you feel comfortable knowing that I'm not just anxious and I'm not afraid on my own. Like,
sure,
this is normal.
Yeah.
Everybody's like freaking out.
Other schools are all doing the same thing.
Yeah, everybody's freaking out. So it's okay. It's just typical dental school stuff. So yeah, come. Please come.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I guess my take on it is, what could I get out of this conference? And one of the things I was worried about was boards, and to have students around the Southern region to be able to come in and collaborate and come up with a list of things that could help me pass my boards and help other students do well. It's just an exchange of information, and it's just pretty awesome.
Yeah, I would say that's huge. If you could, if you get help on passing boards, that's well worth the trip. Then.
Yeah, absolutely.
What has it been like hanging out with other students from our schools too? I mean, have you gotten different perspectives? You'd be like, man, that's cool how they do that, or man, I wish we did that, or you're glad you get to do things a certain way.
It helps you appreciate your school more, but it also helps you bring new ideas to administration of, hey, we might need to look into this. That's I see a lot idea. Of people are doing this. Can we see if this is the option for us? So I like that aspect of it.
Yeah. Well, and I got so jealous with y'all at Meharry. I was like, because, you know, I think some of the lack of the residencies,
yes,
y'all are going to do way more,
yes,
dentistry necessarily than I got to do at UT, because they have, it gets cherry picked by the specialists. Yes. So that's way cool.
Implant dentistry course, like that is going to be so big for us.
Oh, huge.
Like, I love it. Once a month we have like a seminar during lunch where people get to present whatever they've worked on and plan it all out. So it's awesome. It's really cool.
Hey, good for y'all.
Really cool.
East Carolina is in a similar situation. We only have a general practice residency as well as a pediatric. So we're able practice a vast amount of dentistry. Our fourth year, we have community service learning centers, and it pretty much simulates what you would do in real after graduation. So calling patients, setting up schedules, working with a dental team. So that benefit and being able to exchange that idea and just hear about traditions that schools have. I know Georgia, they have this thing called calling the dogs. Just hearing that chant, building school spirit, yeah, and exchanging that camaraderie is pretty cool.
So you go back Tuesday. How do you, is it kind of like, is a little bit coming off of like high coming back into school and the back, the real world hits you back, or, you know, or do you take it? What, I mean, you go back and tell all your other classmates like, man, y'all missed out, or tell me about that, how
no
that
days
works.
Off.
No days off.
So the way we do it, we always want to be able to bring whatever we learn back to school.
Yeah.
So we incorporate this into our newsletter, like pictures, write-ups, like this is what we learned, like, come on, guys, get involved. But then it's also that downer of, okay, I got to go back to school. Like, I don't get to just hang out with everybody, talk dentistry. Like, I actually have to go back and get back into the mode of doing dentistry, which is good. You know, I know Wednesday I have a full day of clinics and I have two patients that day. So going back to do perio maintenance. Yay.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I know, like in the dental office for us, like when we go on CE courses and we come back, the whole team, the whole staff is ready.
Yes.
They're like, oh no, they just went to a CE course. Where they come back? what kind of big ideas do they come back with? And they just kind of wait and see, let it die out, they hope for a lot of times. So, and that's what's tough, because like you've been to a meeting that's exciting like this and going back and talking to your fellow students and trying to get that progression to become better.
And so, I think they did do a good job of this being, and I think Az does a lot, really good job about trying to find areas where that you can, it's not just like, here it is up in the sky. Like you can take, I think there's been things that y'all have, that been presented that are, you can take them back now and start implementing them in the way you're kind of getting ready, which is a great thing. And that's nice. I'll piggyback off what Holsinger was saying. I'll encourage you that when you do get out into practice, that when you go to events and you go to, you know, the ADA meeting or the Hinman meeting or wherever you go, that you bring your teams. I can't tell you enough what an impact it has when, your whole team and group of people is there, not only for the education part, but just the social part. You'll be able to go out together and have dinner and celebrate what you're doing at the office and, you know, talk about where you can get better. You know, what that does as a community and as a family is just, there's nothing like it. And you can't do that even going out to dinner locally. And so that's something I would really, really encourage. You know, you gotta pay more money for hotel rooms and for registrations, but that gets paid back tenfold when you do that. So that would be something I would encourage to everybody is continue to do that for sure. So you got any questions for us?
I have one question.
All right, let's hear it.
Specifically, because you're talking, seeing your presentation, seeing the pictures, I was worried about getting into practice and kind of having to be reserved on who I am. I see, like, I love the way you just operate. Like, you're just you, and the response from that is good. So how do you feel the reception on just – being who you are in your practice.
You know, it just, it's more natural. my thing,
oh,
yeah.
I got plenty of comments on
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Let's totally off the
Here's my thing. I mean, that's part of the reason I'm a big advocate of trying of being an owner, if you can make it happen. Now, some people have no desire to own, and I get that. But even if you're not in an ownership role, that you can have autonomy to do that. Because at the end of the day, I tell my team, like, we have to be here every day for 8 hours a day or however many hours you work for my whole life. I don't want this to be work. I want this to be fun. I want to change people's lives through, you know, whatever we do is dentistry. And I want to do it in a way that is different and fun. Because why not? Why does it have to be this stuffy thing? I mean, if you come into our office, most likely we have those Sonos speakers in every operatory. We're most likely jamming out the classic rock. It's not like we're laid back. I'm frank with all patients. I'm honest with patients. I'm not going to, I want to treat them the way I want to be treated. And to me, the dentist is already somewhat of a fearful place. So why are we going to put, I never got the whole super tranquil music and like elevator music and like we're going to make this like quiet and everybody's like, it doesn't have to be like that. Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. We are live here still from Asda District 4.
Cheers.
So, ladies and gentlemen, introduce yourselves and tell me who you are, where you're from, what year you are.
All right, guys, I'll start. I'm Jeff. I am from this Asheville area, but I go to ECU Dental School, third
ECU.
Year.
All right.
Yeah.
Can you be more specific?
With what, where I'm from? Mm-hmm. Franklin. It's an hour away from Asheville. Yeah, it's small. No, I think she's heard of it. That's it.
Yeah, I love them out.
All right, I'll keep going.
Okay. I'm Cameron Swift. I'm from Clemens, North Carolina. Also a second year at ECU.
I'm Madison Crumley. I'm from Burlington, North Carolina. ECU, D3.
So two D3s and a D2.
Yes.
So is this your first meeting or have you had other meetings?
I've been to every single one.
I've been to my first year, not my second year.
So Asda Fever.
Multiple meetings.
Asda Fever.
Yeah.
Okay, so why do you get so excited about Madison about Asda Fever? Like, tell me about these meetings. What are you experiencing? What do you like about them? What is it that keeps you coming back for more?
So I am probably the biggest cheerleader for organized dentistry. That's like my passion in life. I just love community in a profession. So I love coming to these events and getting to meet all these people and networking. That's probably the best part of it.
It is some good networking.
Yeah, for sure.
Sweet. Okay. What about y'all? What is this? What y'all expect? You come to another one? Have you been? Is your first one?
No, I've been. This is my third event, I think.
So it's awesome. So y'all, how many people did ECU bring?
Around 20 to 30.
Yeah, I would say.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. All right, so what are y'all like getting out of these?
So I came my first year. I came with her, but I know first year, you don't know anything. I remember sitting in on the
You're
lectures.
Like, a party? Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, it was a party then, but now you can take something away from it as a third year. Your lecture was great. I feel like very helpful moving on, but
that's good.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, what questions y'all got? Hit me with something.
Tell me about your CE experience. You didn't do a residency, right?
I did not do a residency. So, okay. So there's two ways to look at this, right? Because if you want to do things beyond what you're just kind of taught in dental school, which we all do, you got to learn it some way. Okay, so you can do that through a residency type program. Okay, or you could do that through continuing education after school, there's multiple paths and things to go. So ultimately, I think what you have to figure out is, what do you want to do? Or what do you enjoy doing and how much of it do you want to do? I mean, for instance, like if you want to do implants, everybody wants to do implants these days. Frankly, I think going to oral surgery school to learn how to do implants is a waste of time. I mean, I'll be honest. I think if placing implants is your goal, then I think you're spending too much time. Now, does that mean that you don't learn a lot of really valuable things in oral surgery? Sure. But you're going to spend a lot of time learning to do things that you'll never use if that's the goal for you doing. The same thing with AGDs and GPRs. If the program fits the needs that you're trying to get, then they can be super helpful, because you really don't know as much as you think you know. And so it can be helpful to do that. What I find a lot of times happens is people go into programs where they think it's going to be one thing and it's not. And then they're like, wow, I was wasting my time. So the question I usually then turn and ask people who are thinking about doing a program is, what are you expecting to get out of it? So
yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I think
looking at it from a different direction would be, what if you get a job where you're kind of stuck doing the simple restorative, the dentist above you is doing all the cool stuff? Like, I think that might be
a worse scenario.
Then going to an AGD where you at least are having someone above you to answer all your questions. You're doing that without that, like...
And that's why I think it's so important to be proactive in your search and your interview process. When you're meeting people and talking to people, I mean, you need to be interviewing the dentist as much as they're interviewing you. I mean, you need to know, what am I getting myself into? I mean, if that's the case, that's probably a crappy case to get into. You know, then you're probably better off going to the GPR AGD. The guy that he was earlier was like 6 months out of school. He got like the criminal creme of associate job. They're paying for all the CE. It's a great situation. Every case is so case by case example. So that's why you can't just have a black and white answer. There may not be a good associate job. You know, it's hard to find in the area you want to be in. So if that's the case, then your other option is, okay, do some type of residency versus going out and buying somebody outright and just figuring it out. Maybe you do take the other one. Now, I will tell you what I have found is in talking to people is that I think I showed that quote earlier today. Fear of success, fear of failure is fear of success. So what I mean by that is, you know, don't be afraid to kind of like jump into the deep in the pool and figure out how to survive. Because then at that point, when you do that, you got to figure it out. You know, so you're forced to make decisions that make you do that and move you in a direction that can be positive. I don't know. You can't be... Does that make sense?
It does make sense. But you never know what you're getting into, I feel like.
You don't.
I feel like looking for a job is scary in the fact that sometimes you might have to settle. If you're set on getting a job, like, that means you're probably not applying for the GPRs, AGDs, and then it might get like graduation, you don't have a job, and you're like, oh my God, like, what am I doing?
So let me tell you a couple things, I guess, about that. Okay. So my buddy Payman, who's not here, but he's one of my other co-hosts. So he will tell you this, did a terrible job about planning after dental school. So he gets to the end of dental school, he's like, well, shit, where the heck am I supposed to go? So last minute, can't find a job, ends up going to Affordable Dentures. Now, a lot of people will have a negative connotation to that. And they're like, oh, he went to a DSO, Affordable Dentures. That's probably a terrible situation. Well, what he did, okay, was then he basically said, okay, here's the situation I'm in. Here's what I got. Guess what one of the biggest benefits of Affordable Dentures is? They will pay for like whatever CE possible with implants. So he took like just stupid amounts of CE, chucked in. He placed 2,000 implants in like his first 2 years out of dental school. That's insane. Literally insane. So he used that, okay, built it there, and now has left, started up a startup practice that literally he just does, it's niche. It literally does implant dentistry. That's what he does. Like, it's crazy. He sees like 10 patients a month, and that's all he needs to see because they're like 40,000 patients.
That'll sustain you right there.
So you could take a situation that maybe is not what you perceive to be ideal and turn it into whatever you want. It's just you gotta kind of make it run with it. I mean, the more you can plan ahead, the better off you'll be. But you can figure it out.
Ooh, I have a question. Yeah. Okay, so if you're starting out in school and say you're either an associate or maybe you're even on your own, and you have one thing that you really like to do, like say you love to do veneers or you love to do implants, how do you market yourself to do that one thing, or how do you get new patients that want that one thing rather than getting patients to say, oh, I need endo or oh, I need...
I mean, it's hard to do. I mean, a little bit of it is early on, you got to take what you get, you know? I mean, I'm definitely in that point in our practice where we're like specifically marking for implants and sleep apnea. Those are two things we're like marking.
How do you market for that? Is it like the patients come in knowing this guy's going to do implants, he's going to fix my sleep apnea, or is it...
Well, I mean, I think with any marketing is you have to figure out people's pain points and like what gets them like, so for, let's say sleep apnea, you know, sleep apnea is like one of the biggest reasons and causes for heart attacks, but that's probably not what gets someone in the door. What probably gets them in their door is that they are sleeping in a different bedroom than their spouse because they're snoring so bad. So you may market more towards that. Then, you know, let me help your high blood pressure.
What does that mean? Like a radio commercial that says, hey, snorers, come to us.
It could be. It could be that. It could be social media. It could be testimonials. It could be. So I'll ask you this question. If you need to get something done, if you need a procedure done, let's say you need to get a knee replacement or something, I don't know, or an ACL, you tear your ACL, how are you going to find somebody?
Google. Yep.
Like,
I went to a Pythagoras in Greenville, and I was looking up reviews online to see who's the best. So.
Or whoever diagnoses it.
You're going to Google them, and you're going to like look at the reviews, and that's probably what you're going to go with, right? So right there, you need to make sure that when people Google you, that they find, or when they Google what you want to do, that they find you. That they Google sleep apnea, as you're the name that comes up.
So do you encourage your patients to write a Yelp review?
100%. Huge.
You do.
So every single patient, we want to at least ask them, hey, would you mind writing a review about us? Because if you pull up, if you Google, let's just say, where are y'all at? Where's Greenville? Love Greenville. It's a quaint town. Okay, if you Google Greenville dentist, okay, go home and do it. Okay, Google Greenville dentist. You're going to have different dentists pop up. Are you going to go to the one that has like 100 reviews or the one that has
100? Right.
Yeah, 100.
Do you offer any incentive to leaving the review?
You can. Not really. Usually I just ask people when they're thankful for what you're doing. You know, people are very willing to write reviews. You just got to ask them. Most people don't. That's the biggest thing is you got to ask them and you got to make it easy. So there's different companies and softwares and things that you can use and buy. But the two big things are you got to ask for it, and then you got to make it easy on them because we're lazy.
Okay, my question. Right. So I feel like the most important part is like your dental team, the people in your office.
It takes a village.
Yeah, exactly. Key point number two. So how do you form the dream team? Like, are there certain interview questions that you're asking? If you're buying into practice, obviously, you know, a lot of times they want you to keep those team people, but I want to be one of these people that keep positive people in a practice and keep them for a long time. I don't want a lot of turnover because, you know, you have patients that come in and love a certain
hygienist.
They're
not coming to see you. They're
exactly.
Coming to see the hygienist.
Yeah. Exactly. And so it's like, how do you form the dream team?
You know, it's hard. I would tell you, first off, when you're buying a practice, you should go to dinner or lunch or something with the team because you need to know what you're buying. You know, the other thing I usually say is you need to make your vision clear. I hope that if you went around to every single one of my team members that they could basically tell you exactly what my goal is for our practice. And because if they don't get that, then how are they supposed to accommodate your goal? You know, if you don't teach them or tell them what you want, then you can't fault them for not doing it. And then it's hard with existing team members. That just is, you know. But those team members, though, bring you a lot of value, you know, because they're the ones that they may be more hesitant to change, but they're also the ones that probably when you diagnose dentistry in their chair, it's going to get scheduled. And that's where, like, you have to be careful because you can't just, like, clean slate and be like, I'm going to get all my people in there. And then, because then all of a sudden it's like, well, they may listen to you and, like, respond to you well, but if they can't do their job, you know, as well as the other person, they're not that valuable to you. That's hard. I don't have a great answer other than, you know, so I'll tell you one big key, I think, is when you're interviewing people and hiring people, make sure you send them, you know, pay for lunch and send them with the entire team to lunch somewhere and you don't go. So that way, the next day, you know, at morning huddle or after or whenever, you can say, what do y'all think? Because you can hire the best employee, but if they don't get along with the rest of the team, then that's going to be a nightmare. So, and you women have, like, you know, your own intuition anyways. So, like, for me, I have a whole staff of women, you know, they can just sense something maybe that I don't sense. They can be like, you know, she's great, but I think that, you know, and I'll be honest, I Facebook everybody. I mean, that's the problem. People are stupid. You know, they have like public profiles and like.
And posting crazy stuff.
So, you know, that weeds out a lot of people, you know, because I mean, you don't want someone showing up hungover to work, you know, and stuff like that. So. You have to, you know, pick a, you know, so you got to be careful about that kind of thing. So I think those are some things.
Are you still practicing with your dad?
I am.
Do you think that gives you a unique experience as opposed to like most dental students that graduate and don't have a dad?
A huge advantage. I mean, that's why I'm sitting here talking to you.
So you have like the ideal person to go work with. What does that mean for other dental students? If they're looking for someone, what are some characteristics that would be?
So you try to find the same thing. And so that's really where I think that's kind of why I kind of preach is like, look, we have our own struggles, our own problems, but we also are given an advantage. And so I can tell you what are the things that we do that make it work so well? Or is that dad is, he gets that I have new ideas and new energy and is willing to let me try things. But that was slowly. So like, even if you go into a practice with a dentist, you know, they're not just going to throw you the keys. And neither was my dad. And that's the thing, right? Like, he wasn't. So what I would do is I'd say, hey, I think we should try this. So they say, okay, let's try it. If it works, well, guess that what that does? That builds credibility. So then when you come back to the next idea, they're like, oh, well, you know, you did say that. That worked pretty well. Maybe you got to. So you do that time over time over time. Then all of a sudden, when you bring something to the table, they're probably a lot more willing to listen. And that, and because so at this point for me, I basically have the keys to the car. You know, he just shows up and does dentistry. You know, he's kind of like, at this point, you've done enough to prove yourself that running the practice that I'm going to trust that you know what you're doing. Because they don't want to do any more than they have to do. Like, right? If they can, it's just their baby, so that you got to kind of prove to them that you can show it. So that goes back to my whole quote thing, and that if you will be humble enough and learn from them and take their experience and not act like entitled, okay? And I say that with, you know, respectfully, because like, that's how I am. Then they will slowly let things go. If you come in and try to clean house and change things all in night, you won't
shut work. Down.
How long did that take, you think?
Probably at least a year and a half, 2 years. I mean, it took time.
So did you buy the practice from your dad?
I bought half the practice.
Okay.
So now we're 50-50 partners. But he has no plan on retiring anytime soon is the problem. So, which is a good thing. And that's one benefit of, you know, it's a little bit of a rabbit hole, but, you know, one of the problems with these group practices and all is it all lowers overhead. So if you can find a partnership that works, it's great because your overhead decreases so much. So like, now we can produce less, but every dollar is worth so much more that it makes like people like, oh, well, do you want your dad to retire so you could be busier? And like, no, like having another, like it will, him being there makes me more money. So like, it's better off. It will never be a one dentist practice again. And when he retires, I'll hire somebody else because, you know, the cash flow is better that way.
But it's just y'all two right now.
It would be more if we had the space.
So if you were looking for someone else, what would you look for?
That's kind of a loaded question. So the problem is what I would look for is someone who didn't want to own and just didn't want to have any desire to do specialty procedures. Someone who wants to show up and do fillings and crowns.
Because you want to do that. So you would be looking for the bread and butter dentist.
Someone that says, hey, I want to be paid well. I want to do fillings and crowns. I want to show up.
Do that. But you're not the typical person that would be looking for someone.
Well, there's some. Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, that's the part of the problem is most dentists who are looking for associates don't know what they want. They think what they
I guess
think
it depends
want,
if you want to sell your practice to them eventually versus
right. and,
you
and
don't.
The problem is a lot of dentists want to – they just want – they see you as a way to make money. So that's not a good situation either for you as the guy coming in. So that's hard. You know, really what you want to look for is someone who wants to retire and leave in 5 years, who wants to transition their practice into someone that they trust. I mean, that's an ideal situation.
So in dental school, how do you go about finding that person?
Great question. So where I would start was I would start to find, where do you want to live? Because we're picky. Really what you should do is you should find the job and go live there and, you know, make money and be happy, but we're spoiled little millennials, so we want to live in the city and where everybody else wants to live. So, you know, she probably wants to open up a practice in downtown Greenville.
I don't.
That's good for you then.
I'm in the mountains. I'm a mountain girl.
All right.
So I'm like country mountain rural.
All right, well, that's
so,
good. See, that's
yeah.
good. That's, yeah. I mean, that's, those are easier to find. And like, everybody wants to move to Nashville right now. It's like, well, that's great. There's bajillion practices in Nashville. So you're just another person. I would tell you to contact your reps. Henry Schein, Patterson, they're local reps who are on the ground every day going in offices who may know of a dentist who doesn't even know they need an associate, but they know they need an associate. Those are great people to get in touch with. They're not going to find you. I'm going to tell you that much. Most likely, the one that has a firm with a search party trying to find dentists is probably not the practice you want to be in. You kind of want to create a position in a good practice. So that means you have to be a lot more active about it.
Also,
that's a better situation.
Yeah, your local dental society will know of like people that
that's a good one.
Want to sell.
And when would you say that you should start looking?
Earlier rather than later.
What does that mean?
Maybe your D3 year. There's no reason that you can't be meeting with dentists and talking to dentists in your D3 year. Because like I said, if the best probably scenarios with these practices that don't know they need it, they're going to need a year to kind of like
make the contracts, all that stuff,
figure it out, yeah. Get over the idea that they need it. And like, it's just a process. So you got to start putting bugs in their ear, you know, especially if there's an area you want to practice in, and some potential dentists, you know, you could potentially want to work with or work for. I mean, you ought to start creating that. I mean, it could be as early as your first or second year of dental school, you know, cause you're going back and it could be like, you know, non-descriptive things where you're going back and shadowing them and hanging out and they, you know, because then the next thing you know, the rep comes in and goes, why don't you hire that person? I've thought about that.
That brings up another good question. If you have a relationship with a dentist and you're in your first or second year and you go back and chat with them, how abrupt or upfront should you be about, hey, I'm looking for a job, or hey, would you want me to join your practice, or hey, do you know anybody?
There's no reason not to be just very abrupt. I mean, I would be very honest. Hey, I'm looking for a job. I think your practice is great. Have you ever thought about hiring somebody? I'd love to, you know, put it in their ear. You got nothing to lose, you know.
If they're not looking for someone, then they might have a friend that might be.
You'll appreciate this country girl. I like to say, you know, the more lead in the air, the more likely a bird is to come down. So, you know, the more feelers you have out there, the more likely you'll pull something together. So, whatever. Alrighty, y'all. Well, thank y'all for jumping on the podcast. It's been fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Good stuff, y'all.
We're famous now.
I think y'all are.
Of course. ECU School of Dental Medicine.
We hope so.
The best. Y'all would be great.
If you want some new grads, let us know.
Y'all can move to Nashville. All right, y'all have a good rest of the meeting.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.